Direct from the Broski Nation headquarters in Los Angeles, California, this is the Broski Report with your host, Brittany Broski.
Well, in the merry month of May, from my home I started, left the girls a tomb, nearly broken-hearted, saluted father dear, kiss my darling mother, drank a pint of beer, my grief and tears to smother, then off to reap the corn, leave where I was born, cut a stout black thorn to banish ghosts and goblins, a brand new pair of brogs, rattling o'er the bogs, frightening all the dogs, on the rocky road to Dublin, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, hunt the hare and turn down the rocky road, and all the way to Dublin, rock for lowly and Mullingar. The accent wasn't great. Okay, here are my notes. Okay, I'm doing notes. Gays, give me notes. And I know you bitches have them. Notes are the Irish accent is not that strong. Really needs to be better. I can't nail a singular Irish accent, which is hard for me to admit because I like to think I'm an accent queen. I like to think I'm a character queen. Takes a long time. Okay, in the lifespan of Brittany, the Ireland thing is relatively new. I've been doing Towie and Essex, South London way longer than I've had this Irish fixation. And now I've come over. Okay, I've switched sides. But I find it hard. I find it kind of hard. Right? It's not good. And the north of Ireland is so much different than like the Dublin accent from Cork. When you get all the way down to there to like Kilkenny, hey, what the fuck are you guys saying? But I'm going to decode it. I'm going to figure it out because I care. It's tough. Then off to reap the corn. A brand new pair of brogues. I love Jack O'Connell. What the hell? I love Jack O'Connell! I love Jack O'Connell! I love him, dude. He has a grip on my life right now. Please just keep with me, guys. I'm sorry. I will be over it. Give it another week or two. I'll be done, I promise. Do you remember in 2022 when I had that Robert Pattinson fixation? That lasted for, I'm not joking, about 2-3 months. Whenever Batman came out. That y'all stuck with me through that, okay? Now, do you also, the Pedro Pascal phase, that was a long one. And then I gave it up, and now he's back, okay? And I've relapsed. It comes in waves. I had an Oscar Isaac phase, short-lived. So sometimes it's short, sometimes it's long. Sebastian Stan, he came out of nowhere. When I met him for Sundance last year, 2 years ago, that took over me like, and then I was with it for like a week, and then it was gone. Jack O'Connell? I've seen every movie he's ever been in. I've seen every Vimeo student film project he's ever even gotten near. Oh, it's a level that's just, it's obsessive to a point that I can't even speak about it. I'd like to apologize. Guys, welcome back to the Broski Report. Long time no see. Many things on my mind today. Many a silly or serious topic. You guys pick. 1, 2, 3... Hope you said serious, because that's what I want to start with. Here's something that's been on me brain, on me noggin. See, what is that? It's been on my fucking brain. See, that feels more natural, but it's not. Some of you freaks are doing AP testing right now. I remember when I took my AP test. I passed all of them because that was my life worth. You know what I mean? As a high schooler, as a child, if I wasn't smart, what was I? Like, that was just kind of how my relationship with my brain was in high school. I didn't have time to be depressed or anxious because I was studying. You know what I mean? Then I hit 21, 22, and I was like,
oh, this is what you guys are talking about. I've arrived at the party now.
Anyway. So AP testing for me, I did all AP classes in high school. I never took one regular class because I was like, that's not my destiny. Okay. I have to be really good at this one thing. The only, and this checks out now that I'm thinking about it. The only class that I took that I did not place in, like that I didn't get college credit for,
was my calculus class.
I hate math. I'm not good at math. I've never been good at math. And it makes me feel stupid because I am, what is that? I'm right-brained? what side of the brain is creative?
Right.
According to popular view,
creativity is a product of the brain's right hemisphere. Innovative people are considered right brain thinkers, while left brain thinkers are thought to be analytical and logical. There is a rat in the kitchen! Linguini! The rat!
Hey, that was good. That was really good.
Yadasan! Gusto edasan! Linguini!
While it's a popular misconception that math is primarily a left-brain function, it's more accurate to say that mathematical processing involves both the left and right hemisphere of the brain. Crap. What the flip? Okay, fine. Well, whatever. I'm not into that. I'm not into all that. So I thought it would be fun today to do some sample free response questions. Let's see what we've got here. And I'm just going to kind of freeball these. And if there are any teachers in the audience, in the crowd, this is a recorded podcast. If there's anyone in the live audience right now who would like to grade this, just keep in mind that I'm not all there. If anyone's thinking about being critical of me or mean to me, just consider the fact that my screws are loose and something is wrong. Keep that in mind before you move forward. Okay, here we go. Many works of literature explore a character's sense of lacking something important in life. The character perceives an unfulfilled need, which may be emotional, spiritual, financial, or something the character does not understand or cannot articulate. Either from your own reading or from the following list, choose a work of fiction in which such a feeling is explored. Then, in a well-written essay, analyze how the character's sense of an unfulfilled need contributes to an interpretation of the work as a whole. Do not merely summarize the plot. Okay, you want to know what came to mind immediately reading this prompt? Lightning McQueen and Cars. Lightning McQueen and Cars. Let me restate the prompt. A character's sense of lacking something important in life. Choose a work of fiction in which such a feeling is explored. Analyze how the character's sense of an unfulfilled need contributes to an interpretation of the work as a whole. So here's the thing about Lightning McQueen. And again, English teachers, take it easy on me and just, you know, don't go in heavy-handed with that red pen. Because no, this is off the dome. I'm freeballing. I'm spitballing here. Lightning McQueen, to me, represents a big pocket of something missing in American culture. And I think Lightning McQueen represents the American dream for a lot of people, right? NASCAR or the American racing circuit being the sort of symbolism here. You get money, fame, fortune, girls, access. But what are you critically lacking? Community. Right? You start running in these 1% circles, you start brown nosing, bumping elbows with people that you used to idolize, you used to look up to, and it's disappointing. And what you were hoping to find, what you were seeking, which is acceptance, belonging, worth, self-efficacy, self-importance, a purpose. That doesn't necessarily go hand in hand with achieving success, okay? Now, to break apart achieving success, I think there are levels to it. Success can be financial success. I think that's the one that we think of the most. But there is a level there of, you know, we're talking James Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Big time rush. This is what I'm always coming back to, guys. Big time hierarchy of needs. What's at the very top? Community, self-love, knowing yourself, all of these things that are abstract, high-level, humanoid wants and desires. To complete that trifecta of what delivers happiness and purpose. I think Lightning McQueen and his journey through Radiator Springs sort of summarizes You didn't even know that was missing, but you knew that you weren't happy. So life has a way of forcing you down that road that you would never choose yourself. You would never choose to literally and metaphorically go down that road, that dirt road into a small town and meet these wonderful people who teach you more about yourself than you ever knew before or that you probably ever would come to know. And I don't think it is a mistake that this message was delivered to Lightning McQueen through this idea of a small abandoned town. This town that was developed around, I mean, who was Stanley? He found oil reserves. Was that what it was? Stanley's oil caverns. That was a boom town that, you know, suddenly when they built the highway, when they built Route 66, it diverted tourist traffic or the people who live there. And, you know, now it's just all these people that are left that serve as sort of relics of the golden age of America when business was booming and life could be a dream. Boom, doom, 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 shaboom. Right? That's kind of behind us. And what's left is this like bluesy, forgotten, sandy, dirty, rusted town. So the fact that Lightning McQueen finds a family, found family, and people with real grit and personality and stories in love, he's lacking that in his real life. So, back to the question at hand. Analyze how the character's sense of an unfulfilled need contributes to an interpretation of the work as a whole. Did I not just fucking do that? I kind of ate. Radiator Springs represents the American small town and how it is dying. And with that, dialects, culture, traditions are dying. As people move into big cities, you know, suburbia, whatever, you lose the connection with your community and your neighbors and therefore kind of your humanity. Lightning McQueen represents the closest thing that Americans have to royalty, which is celebrity. And celebrity, of course, there's different levels to celebrity, but Lightning McQueen's case is being famous for being really good at what you do. With that comes arrogance. With that comes a fan base. With that comes, you know, all the negative and positive sides of fame. But it is empty. And so that is the larger hole that Radiator Springs fills for Lightning McQueen. This has been my AP response. Thank you so much. Let's do one more. Ooh, okay. Okay. In many works of fiction, houses take on symbolic importance. Such houses may be literal houses or unconventional ones, like hotels, monasteries, or boats. Either from your own reading or from the list below, choose a work of fiction in which a literal or unconventional house serves as a significant symbol. Then, in a well-written essay, analyze how this house contributes to an interpretation of the work as a whole. Off the bat, I'm thinking of Psycho, Norman Bates. I'm also thinking of Bates Motel, which is the same story. It's just the hotel that they own. And how, obviously, the hotel is the, not only the literal scene, but the metaphor for, you know, people passing through, these people who are maybe hoping to remain anonymous, who are on the run, there's something to be said about the motel, the American motel. And Orville Peck has some really good thoughts on this concept. And I kind of heard it from him for the first time of there's a unique quality to an American motel and how so many walks of life have passed through some of these iconic buildings and what it represents and what it means, you know, the working class or scraping together the money that it takes for one night in a motel, families, single women, single men. It's just like, what a strange liminal place that is somehow very American. I think that could be one. I'm thinking, I'd like to say actually Dracula's castle. Houses take on symbolic importance. I would say Dracula's castle represents the ancient and older than old nature and almost adherence to tradition that Count Dracula has. Through all the different interpretations from Bram Stoker's Dracula to Robert Eggers' Nosferatu, I think that, obviously because that's the most recent one on my mind, this insistence on you will refer to me by my family's name, this is how he does things and has always does things. For someone who cannot die, Dracula's castle represents him and his being and his mission, which I think as long as Count Dracula stands, so will this castle, right? And maybe one of them will outlive each other. I think that's a very interesting parallel, or I guess mirror, of the castle is that way because Dracula is that way, and Dracula is that way because the castle is that way. And what it represents, you know, alone on a hill, untouchable, he will come to you. And if you happen to wander into his, you're his. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much symbolism in what a castle represents. Also, an abandoned, sort of decrepit castle. Dracula's whole thing is he turns people, right? He captures people and makes them his servants. I think in a mansion as infinitely large as Dracula's castle, there will always be room for his victims. He is forever asserting himself as the lord of the manor by turning all of his minions. There's a symbolic nature there of being trapped, where you can enter, but you may never leave, or you will never leave the same. Man, I'm kind of cooking. Let's move on to some stuff that I've been meaning to Google lately. What the fuck is a Charlie horse? Have I already looked this up? A Charlie, okay, now it's spelled C-H-A-R-L-E-Y, is a common term for a muscle cramp, particularly in the calf muscle. Calf is my calf is not my thigh. It is lower calf. Why is it called a calf? Why is my leg meat called a calf? The word calf to describe the back of the lower leg likely comes from Old Norse kalfi. The word might share a root with the Germanic word kalb, which is also used for young cow, and a Proto-Indo-European. Whoa! Proto-Indo-European word gelb, meaning swell. The swelling or rounded shape of the leg muscle might have influenced the naming of both the area of the leg and the young cow. So it's Nordic and Proto-Indo-European. Crazy. Early 14th century. That's nuts. Now, I did just read that from Reddit r/etymology, which I will be subscribing to, actually. That's nuts. Yeah, my leg meat. I get these sometimes out of nowhere. And I guess that's the whole point, right? But when you get a Charlie horse, isn't that because... Well, I do want to know why they call it a Charlie horse. Is it because a horse... It feels like a horse is chomping on your leg meat? Is a horse, like, kind of going to town on your leg meat? Did that happen to one guy? And they were like, fucking Charlie. The horses love Charlie. You know that meme that's like... So when I get real mad, I print out this photo of Louis Tomlinson and chew on it. Y'all know that meme? I used to pour milk on my Hannah Montana pillow and throw it against the wall and it would make a loud thwop sound. Y'all know that meme? Guys, don't leave me out. Hannah Montana pillow meme. Yeah, this one. I used to have this Hannah Montana pillow that I used to pour milk on and suck the milk back. I used to have this Hannah Montana pillow that I used to pour milk on and suck the milk back out of it. And it was sopping wet all the time. I used to slam it against walls and it would make a loud thud. What is wrong with you guys? I used to suck the milk back out of it. Okay. Where's the Louis Tomlinson one? Louis Tomlinson biting meme. Maybe I made this up. Maybe this was like a doctored something. This girl would print out this photo of Louis Tomlinson and chew on it. I don't know. The bullshit on my Instagram Explore page could probably put me in an institution, I'll be honest. Look at this crazy screenshot I grabbed the other day. My Explore page. Like, what is that stutter? I've never heard anyone else who has that stutter. The blah, 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 blah stutter? It's just me. What the hell? I get excited and start flipping my tongue like one of those fucking goats. Wait. Okay, now clearly it's not him making that noise, but I do want to show one of them who does make the noise. Girl, that's the stutter I have. Why do I do that? And here come the linguists in the comments. Well, it's actually because you're speaking at the front of your mouth, and this actually happens a lot with... Okay, just tell me I have the goat stutter and move on. We actually call this the goat stutter.
Okay.
I checked 23andMe, and it's like, is prone to have the goat stutter. Fuck! Okay, a Charlie horse. Who the hell was Charlie? Team, side note. This summer, we don't have time to be tired or thirsty, okay? We're booked, we're busy, we're running around the city. We're running on vibes, the fumes of vibes. However, to keep those vibes refreshed, we're going to need some, say it with me, Dunkin' Refreshers. Good, good. A Dunkin' Refresher is your secret weapon for staying energized and refreshed for whatever tomfoolery you guys get up to this summer. Seriously. Let me show you how this racehorse runs, okay? See my beautiful cup here. Get some ASMR. That's good. Here's the deal. A Dunkin' Refresher is customizable. Starts with 5 different options for a base. Green tea, water, sparkling water, black tea, oat milk. Okay? Then from there, stay with me, walk with me. From there, you pick your favorite flavor. And the current options are strawberry dragon fruit, mango pineapple, raspberry watermelon, tropical guava. Now, what I'm rocking with here today, right now, is actually going to be a water base, water, with the strawberry dragon fruit in it. But you gotta get it ice cold. It's filled to the brim with ice. And then I do, you know, the normal amount of strawberry dragon fruit, because I'm normal, very normal. And then water. And that's it for me. But I've been feeling a little bit like I might need to do oat milk soon. Because oat milk with that strawberry, and you do a little bit more strawberry dragon fruit, and then it's going to be given kind of like strawberry milk, which I like strawberry milk because I'm a big baby. Because I'm strawberry milk. What's that in your cup? Is it coffee? No, it's actually going to be strawberry milk. Okay. Like a baby. So I'm doing strawberry dragon fruit water right now, but maybe one day soon when I'm feeling crazy, I'll do strawberry dragon fruit oat milk, okay? Let your creativity run wild with the perfect go-to summer sip. Thanks, Duncan. I love you guys. You guys are like a father and mother to me, and a brother and a sister to me, and like a refresher. You're like a refresher to me. All right, let's get back into the episode. Dehydration, age, pregnancy, and certain medical conditions may increase the risk of Charlie horse. Massage can relieve cramping pain. Stretches and hydration during exercise are work. Okay. Should you rub a Charlie horse? Hey, watch out. See, I don't even need a boyfriend for real. I just need somebody to rub out my Charlie horse. When I get a Charlie horse, who's there to rub it? Okay, sometimes I'm locked up, I'm stove up. I can't get down there and rub my horse. Sometimes the horse needs to be rubbed. I was off a gummy the other day, just in my home. I was simply in my home. And I was making myself dinner, and what came to mind is 10,000 years will give you such a crick in the neck. And then when he goes,
Did you rub my lamp? Did you wake me up? Did you bring me here? That's Robin Williams as the genie. That was in my head. And that's how I feel about this. Did you rub my horse? Did you wake me up? You guys wouldn't last one day in my mind. Mr. Aladdin, sir, want to be your pleasure, please.
Let me take your order, shut it down.
You ain't never had a friend like me. Life is your restaurant, and I'm your maitre d'.
When are they going to let a bro girl do the genie live action remake? Will Smith had his time as the genie. It's my turn. Let me do, except it's just me doing a Robin Williams impression the whole time.
Come on, whisper what it is you want. You ain't never had a friend like. Try some of column A. Try all of column B.
Come on, guys.
I'm in the mood to help you, dude. I'm in the mood to help you, dude.
Because he's a goat. That's not the part where he's a goat. That's when they're in the city.
Prince Ali, fabulous, Ali Ababa.
Strongest 10 regular men, definitely. He faced the galloping hordes, 100 bad guys with swords.
And brought those goons to their lords, our Prince Ali. He's got... Dina, go to...
He got the monkeys. I mean the monkeys. I have to watch Aladdin.
When it comes to exotic type mammals.
That's when they're the balloons.
Because he's got the deuce. And I'm telling you, it's a
world-class menagerie.
You guys don't get it. You guys don't get Aladdin. My two favorite Disney movies ever, ever. Aladdin and Hercules. Are you kidding me? It doesn't. They peaked. They peaked. And when Disney, listen to me manifest this right now. Listen to me speak this into the wide, vast universe. When Disney decides to do a return to 2D animation, and I mean 2D 90s era animation by popular demand, I will be acting, I will be voice acting in that revival. Trust when I speak this into the universe. Oh my God, I guess I can talk about this now. I was in, I voice acted in something Disney. I voice acted in, Hamster and Gretel. Like, gag. Hamster and Gretel, which is kind of like a Phineas and Ferb spinoff. I was Grandma Trudy. I voice acted in it! I did it! I believe it's on Disney XD. Is that not gag? I cried. I called my parents. I sobbed. What a dream come true. And I got a picture of me in front of the Disney Animation Studio like this. Come on, guys. Okay, who the hell is Charlie Horse? Massage helps to increase blood flow to the area, which can help to deliver oxygen and nutrients to the muscle and remove waste products that may be contributing to the cramp. There's a bunch of poop in my arteries. So there's a bunch of poop in my leg. Ew. How did that get there? I've never once tried to rub out a Charlie horse. I just sit there and, ow, ow. That's what I do for a Charlie horse. Where did the term Charlie horse come from? I'm sweating down my back. Did I already look this up like 100 episodes ago? One theory suggests that it refers to a horse named Charlie that was used to pull the groundskeeper's cart at a baseball field. The horse was known to have leg cramps, which the players would jokingly call Charlie horses. Another theory attributes the term to a baseball player named Charlie Radborn, who was known to suffer from leg cramps during games. Then why is it called a Charlie horse? Regardless of its exact origin, the term Charlie horse has become a common colloquial term for a sudden, painful muscle cramp, typically in the leg. Now, see, I would believe that it was from a groundskeeper's cart at a baseball field. Charlie horse. Oh, I got a Charlie horse. Also, not very inventive for the name, right? I've got a Charlie knuckle. I'm going Charlie mode. That's what they should have said. I'm busting a fat Charlie. I'm busting a Charlie. That's what they should have said, but they didn't. Late 19th century. They never would have understood busting a fat Charlie. They never would have gotten that. But they did that so that I could come on here today and say I had busted a fat Charlie, and you know what I mean. Okay? It means I got a Charlie horse. It means my leg's cramping real bad. I need somebody to rub me out. My family and I have this inside joke that's like, I don't remember where it came from. Actually, I do. My mom's brother growing up, I guess while he was being potty trained, would sit on the commode, and when he was done, he'd go, "Somebody come wipe my butt!" Okay? And so we say that when my dad gets too old to wipe his butt, he's going to start doing that. So I don't know why I brought that up. Oh, because I need somebody to come rub out my Charlie horse, and I need somebody to come wipe me. That's what, when dad starts, you know, being dad, we're like, remember, we're going to be the ones wiping you. So unless you want to be in an old folks home, you better be nice to us. I'm not wiping you if you talk to me like that. I might not wipe him, period. I'm going to pay my siblings to wipe my dad's butt. Because that's not, ultimately, I am the oldest. That's not on me. I've done enough. That's on you guys. Figure it out. Best of luck. Okay, one more thing I've been meaning to Google. Male and female hummingbirds. How do hummingbirds breed? Male hummingbirds are typically more vibrant, often with a bright red, iridescent throat patch called a gorget. Females, on the other hand, usually have a white or pale throat with less intense colors. That is very interesting to me. That is very interesting to me because something similar is with ducks, with mallards. I'd hate if my, what is that called? Scientific etymological name is mallard. You might as well call me a bastard. Bastard. Oh my God, I'm reading Game of Thrones right now. Like I'm reading it. Bastard. I forgot how like, God, they hate bastards in this show, in this book. They are so mean to the bastards. I'd be nice to bastards if I, because that's not his fault. It's not his fault that his dad and his mom work together, okay? That his dad's a hooker. Come over here, bastard. You're good with me. He's good with me. Bastard. I was about to look up duck bastard. Duck bastard. Duck mallard. Oh, the mallard is the man. The mallard is a dabbling duck that breeds throughout the temperate and subtropical Americas, Eurasia, and North Africa. It's been introduced into, okay, don't care. Is a female duck a mallard? The female duck is called a hen or a duck. The male is called a drake. Oh, mallards are a species of duck.
Oh, I had no idea. Okay, I had no idea.
The female is called a hen? That's not right! Domestic duck. Yeah, these white ducks. I don't like white ducks because you might as well just be a damn swan at that point. But look how, why are they like that? Domestic ducks are ducks that have been domesticated and raised for meat and eggs. That's crazy. Oh, I like these. Indian runner duck. Oh my God, wait, I love them. They're the real skinny ones, and they like, it looks like they're on segways. Like they lean forward and they run and they quack, 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 quack. Maybe I need a duck. Maybe I need a pet duck. The next time I film it, look, they're so cute. Where are they going? Where are you guys going? The British Waterfowl Association. Now, you know, these Brits go nuts about ducks. You know, they don't mess around. If it is the British Waterfowl Association, look, don't ever go against them in some trivia against ducks. Let me just read. We're going to read this paragraph just so I show you guys. I know they're not messing around.
Oh, he swiddle. Look, he swiddle.
This breed was formerly classified as a light duck, but is now generally in a class of its own due to its popularity. Interbred with other types, the runner contributed to the ancestry of nearly all the light duck breeds, which have a lower carriage than it. There are now 14 standard colours in the UK and several more in Australia and Germany. The Bully is a crested runner, but is still judged as a light duck, the crest being an important additional criterion in judging. Judging? They're doing duck shows? Duck shows.
Okay, so I type in duck shows and Daisy Duck, Daffy Duck. Who is Plucky Duck? I didn't mean actual.
Do they do duck shows like dog shows? Yes, there are dog and duck shows. Oh, this is not what I mean. Often sheepdogs demonstrate their herding skills by rounding up ducks. No, I mean, are we showing off ducks the way that this British site is claiming that they are prize pigs? Wow, this is a whole world. Who would know? Taxonomic classification. That's what I wanted to call it. Not etymological. That is the name origin itself, the word origin. Taxonomy is what I was looking at. How is it classified? What is the species? How is it classified? Is that called taxonomy? Taxonomy. The scientific study of naming, defining, and classifying groups of biological organisms based on shared characteristics. I'm a genius.
Okay. Moving on.
Yeah, get into the Indian running duck. Indian runner duck. Shout out. Major shout out to those guys. And you want to know something? That show, Duck Dynasty? Yeah, I was raised on that show. And I found the fact that they were doing all that for some ducks. Have you ever eaten duck? It's very... Duck is very gamey. And they always do... Here's what I found interesting as well every time I go to Europe, okay? Paris, Barcelona, Rome, London, for God's sake, Dublin. Any of these cities that are either A... historically working class, B, by a body of water, C, used to be used primarily as agricultural/farming land, okay? Meaning this was not territory historically occupied by the ruling class. Like, for example, Paris, Palace at Versailles. Versailles is, what, an hour away from Paris by car? I could be talking out of my ass. How close is Palace of Versailles from Paris? Yeah, it's like a 38-minute drive. In Rome, well, I mean, I guess it goes how far back do you want to go? Because, of course, Rome was the capital of the Roman Empire. I mean, more so like very recently, let's say 1700s. Onward. A lot of the local cuisine that you will find in these places is working class people food. When you have something a la Romana or something that is historically localized to that region, like Basque country in Spain or whatever, it is incorporating ingredients from that region, which at the time would have been ingredients that are available to the working class. So when you're dealing with, you know, any dish that's a la Romana, a lot of the time it incorporates like entrails and the parts of the animal that were not used. So, you know, you'd get the main meat from the cow or the sheep or the goat or whatever, you would sell that, and then the family would be left with the rest of the animal. And that's what these recipes really come from, which is very interesting because, you know, us as Americans or Westerners, whatever, it's like your gut reaction is to be like, oh, but it's not you, because when you try it, it's actually pretty good. And the flavors are so hearty and so complementary to the natural flavors of these entrails and whatever part of the animal that has been used. And it's been passed down through family lineages, these recipes. It's part of the culture now, and it's part of the personality of the cuisine that's in these cities. So I always found that very interesting when you look at like French cuisine. Like, what's that scene in Ratatouille? That's two Ratatouille references in this episode. It's it's a working class dish. I mean, it's just garden vegetables, you know, with some sauce. And he makes fun of it, right? He's like, that is a peasant dish or whatever he says. And it's fucking good. Anyway, very interesting. Very interesting. And it also makes a lot of sense when you think about you cook what you got and how amazing that these recipes now define these cities and the people and the culture of these cities. Speaking of which, Stanley Tucci has a new cooking show on Disney Plus. Yeah, I'm watching that. Not even an ad. This is not even an ad for it. I'm just going to start watching it. Because he had that other show, that was called Searching for Italy. Searching for Italy, starring a one Stanley Tucci. He's also got that show that he has celebrities on where they cook and they all sit and they eat and they talk. Oh, I want to go on it so bad. I have a fascination and fixation on Stanley Tucci. I think it's because I want to be him when I grow up. There's something very magnetic about Stanley Tucci to me that I don't think a lot. I think a lot of you guys act like you get it, but you don't get it. You don't get where I'm coming from with Stanley Tucci. Seriously. I love him. I love him to death. He is in that class of person, almost like an Anthony Bourdain to me, where they see the world so clearly for what it is. There's no prejudice. There's no, I guess, reservations about what it is we're living through and what we're looking at. And yet through all of it, they're optimistic. I really, really look up to that. They're cultured. Here's something else I wanted to bring up to you guys. I hosted Brandcast, which is a celebration of YouTube, really. This marks 20 years that YouTube has been around and has been, you know, this monolith of media and entertainment and culture, an epicenter of culture, really. And so they asked me to host this event, which is put on for the sponsors. You know, YouTube is the number one streaming platform ever. For the last 2 years in a row, I mean, beating even these streaming, other more famous streaming platforms. And so it's a big honor to be a part of that conversation, you know, of how YouTube is changing not only the game, but the world. Access to these type of creator-led videos and channels and projects. And it's just very exciting. So they had me host, and it was so much fun. I got to meet Sean Evans! I got to meet Sean Evans! Who remembers this video? When I made Bestie Taylor dress up as Sean Evans and we ordered Aspern chicken wings? And she asked me some horrible questions. I've loved Sean Evans for so long, and I say this every chance I get, but Royal Court, from the beginning, when we started to make Royal Court, I absolutely had Hot Ones in mind. I have never seen anything like Hot Ones. And not only have I not seen it, what Hot Ones has accomplished by shattering this, you know, glass barrier between, I guess, just average viewer, American viewer, and international celebrity. And they've always felt so untouchable. And I think that really started to shift during COVID in a major way. But Hot Ones, honestly, is part of that conversation of like, tearing down this wall of really researching the guest, bringing them down from God level to human level, and making them suffer eating hot chicken wings. It's like there's nothing more normal and human than eating something way too spicy and freaking out. You know what I mean? And watching someone suffer in that way. I think that it's just genius, and it's so simple, and it works. And so a lot of that realm of interview, meaning humanizing the guest, I wanted to bring into Royal Court. And I think we've done that in a unique and personalized way that's personal to me. You know, it's my ability to find common ground with that guest and to humanize them to y'all the way that I am human to you guys. And it's such a fun endeavor, and sometimes it's incredibly successful, and sometimes I feel like, you know, I need to work on myself as an interviewer. And that's part of the process, is there are so many different types of personalities and backgrounds, and people come into it with a willingness, because I don't have the high stakes that Hot Ones has. But Royal Court works in its own way, and it's so much fun to do. So yeah, I got to meet Sean Evans, and I kind of told him that in so many words because we were only together for so long, of like, he's such an inspiration, and I think that his respect level for the guests that he has on is, that's king to me. And it is my humble mission to emulate what he has kind of built. Not rip off the bit, but Sean Evans has such a gentle demeanor, a gentle approach, where he just really wants to make you feel comfortable and ask you some great questions, great research questions, and is just really great guy. So that was kind of gagged to get to meet him because love him to death. Also met Johnny Harris. Freaked the fuck out. Love Johnny Harris. Yeah, it was crazy. Such a really, really cool opportunity. And I felt very, very loved by YouTube. I mean, I love this platform and I love being a creator on here, and it's changed my life in so many ways. And so to have that love be kind of reciprocated from the platform, it means a lot, especially as a woman. A lot of them major famous creators who we know from YouTube are men who run these multi-million billion-dollar production companies or are operating at this level that's just unheard of before. It's majority men, and that's upsetting and frustrating, you know? So to even have my hat in the ring of someone who is attempting to climb that ladder of building this into something way bigger, you know, and arguably we already kind of have. I mean, I have a full team and crew that works on pretty much
everything except this. This is just me in my house with four walls.
But you'd never know. You'd never know. The way I'm looking around, talking to myself, bouncing stuff off the wall. Yeah. All my personalities are in this room with me here. Okay, so I'm never alone. I'm never alone. Anyway, did Brandcast. That was really, really fun. Also, they had Lady Gaga close the show.
Okay.
Girl, I flipped the out. I flipped out. Perfect Celebrity? That song is a work of art. I was, are you out of your mind? Gaga is just truly a generation-defining talent. She is a one of one, Lady Gaga. Are you out of your mind? I was blown away. I've seen Gaga live before. I saw her during the Art Pop Ball. I saw that, which was in like, what, 2014, 2015? That was the last time I saw Gaga live. So this was like, wow, 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 wow. Oh, I love her. Freaked out. Okay, that just about does it for me, team. I'm going to leave you with my songs of the week, which are all Irish songs. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. You're going to get cultured one way or another, and it's whatever I'm hyperfixating on that week. So I don't want to hear it. You guys don't have the mic. I have the mic. So pull up Spotify and play this song. Traveling.
It feels like summertime.
Damn it, it's not even gonna pull up because my shit hasn't updated.
Okay, where the fuck is it? Where is it?
Here we go. Okay, here are a few. Star of the County Down by the High Kings. Whiskey in the Jar, the Dubliners. Rocky Road to Dublin Live, the Dubliners. Which, by the way, that version, Rocky Road to Dublin Live by the Dubliners, was in Sherlock Holmes. Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes. Did I recognize it? Yes. Because it's when he finishes in the fighting ring and he goes behind the bar and grabs a bottle of wine and opens it with his mouth and starts drinking it. And it's dun 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 dun. Anyway. Irish Rover by the Pogues and the Dubliners. The Parting Glass by the High Kings, and alternately, let me suggest Hozier's version of The Parting Glass and Ed Sheeran's version of The Parting Glass. You want to know one of my favorite songs of all time? It's Make It Rain by Ed Sheeran, which was on some soundtrack, Sons of Anarchy. That? Sons of Anarchy? It was on that soundtrack. And I don't know if he wrote it for that soundtrack or if it was just on the album and they put it on this. I don't know. That is one of my favorite songs ever. I like weird, bluesy, I don't even know what you would call it. Just like, damn. Another song like that is by Chris Stapleton. It's called Death Row. Death Row by Chris Stapleton. Oh, it's one of my favorite songs ever. Not commercially successful songs by any means. Just, they speak to me. And one more for you, Whiskey or the Devil by the Clancy Brothers, Tommy Meckham and Liam Clancy. Those are my songs of the week. And next week, I'll have something a little different for you. But right now, we're just doing Irish. Right now, we're doing Irish traditional. Thank you so much. If you want merchandise, go to broski.shop. We've got moomoos. We've got t-shirts. We've got hoodies. If you want music, go search Brittany Broski on wherever you listen to music. Come on. I've got a single out. I've got a Harry Styles cover out. Maybe something else coming later this month. Whatever. Go listen to it. Go do what you need to do. I'm going to leave you to it. I will see you guys next week. Y'all be good. Bye-bye.